John Decker, our own White House correspondent. We talked a little bit yesterday about Biden and Trump debates. What else do you have going? Good morning, John. How are you?
Well, I am well, Jack. Happy Friday to you. Since we spoke yesterday, there is a new development on the debate front. CBS has offered up two potential dates for a vice presidential debate. One's in mid-July. The other is in mid-August. And Kamala Harris, the current vice president, has already accepted that offer. No reply yet from the Trump campaign. And, of course, Donald Trump doesn't have a running mate yet. So that factors into accepting that particular offer from CBS. But we now know that there are two presidential debates on the calendar. The first one is June the 27th in Atlanta, hosted by CNN. And there's going to be so much hype, Jack. You're going to give that hype as well to that debate happening on June the 27th.
John, I know it's only speculation. With Donald Trump, it's hard to speculate. But I want to get the Decker prediction. I'll give you mine. I noticed lately that, because I got to know him when he ran, not know him, but he's in my studio, Doug Burgum of North Dakota, very formidable person, did very well in business, co-founding Great Plains Software, selling it to Microsoft. Mm-hmm. I think Trump likes the fact that he might have someone with deep pockets, I'm just saying. He also likes him, but I think Burgum would be a more formidable energy secretary if Trump's elected again. It just feels like Tim Scott, but I'm not sure. If you had to predict, John Decker, who Trump ends up picking in the end, give me just two choices that you think in the end, knowing, you know, Donald Trump, and it's impossible to predict, but who do you think?
Okay, I'm glad you phrased it that way, Jack. Here are my two choices. One is a mainstream choice in the sense that you're not going to raise your eyebrows if I say this, and that is Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the governor of Arkansas, who Donald Trump trusts. He trusts her, and that's a big part of his decision-making. Mm-hmm. The other person that he trusts, this is out of the mainstream, is Donald Trump Jr. I think those two people are on the top of my list in terms of who Donald Trump will choose for his running mate.
Oh, my goodness. It would be like Kennedy and Bobby, his brother. Oh, my goodness. You know, I think give you a lot
to talk about.
Do you think you wouldn't go with a Tom Cotton or a Rubio, one of these senators that they've talked about?
No, I don't. I mean, I think he realizes how valuable this is. He also values more than anything in terms of loyalty. All the criteria he's looking at, loyalty. Exactly, loyalty. And he will go through that list, and he's got to determine who would be most loyal to me. And Sarah Huckabee Sanders, in her course as the White House press secretary, proved herself to Donald Trump time and time again. And she, I think, excites a certain very important part of the Republican base, and that's the Christian conservative part of the base. So the same type of thing that we saw with Mike Pence in 2016.
And he'd be picking a woman. If you had to say when?
Oh, he's going to wait like you would typically wait if you were a president who needs to choose his running mate. Wait until mid-July, the week before the Republican National Convention. You know, bring out that excitement. He's already put out some emails that I've received as a media person, the emails suggesting who should I choose. He's going to continue doing that to excite the base and energize his base ahead of that choice that he ultimately will make.
I guess there's no upside for doing it earlier. Thank you, John Decker. Make it a great week in our own White House,
Jack.
Correspondent. Senate President Jeb Bradley on a Friday morning going earlier. Very busy Thursday in your chamber yesterday, Senator.
Yes, it was busy. I mean, you highlighted all the big issues. The Senate, you know, killed assisted suicide, which I think is the right vote. It you know, I understand the implications for people that are terminally ill and experiencing pain, but boy, the slippery slope, we're seeing it happen, especially in Canada. I think there was a big concern there. You know, in terms of transgender athletes, I supported a bill several years ago to add gender identity to the anti-discrimination statutes for public housing, accommodation, and employment. But that doesn't mean that, you know, biological boys who have an advantage in speed and strength should be competing against girls. And I think this is a very narrow carve out. I think we need to protect the privacy of women's locker rooms. And so the Senate adopted that. And lastly, you know, we had a long debate about marijuana last night. I think, you know, I do want to give my good friend Lou D'Alessandro a shout out for sticking with us, those of us that try to improve the bill. It did pass. It still has a number of hurdles to get over, you know, before it's on its way to the governor. But Senator Dee, you know, was very helpful, and I appreciate that. And, you know, we had a lot of spirited debates. I think Senator Whitley and I were, you know, going head-to-head, and I know she's running for Congress, and I admire her and her passion. I don't always agree with her, but I'll tell you what, she works hard, and she has a long record of working with people like me to try to solve problems. And while I don't agree with her on marijuana, we had some pretty spirited debates.
Well, I applaud the magnanimous. Let me just ask you a reaction, Senate President Jeb Bradley. This is Ray Buckley, chair of the New Hampshire Democrat State Party. Despite statewide opposition, New Hampshire Senate Republicans passed dangerous anti-LGBTQ legislation. He says, I am appalled in the statement by the incessant and extreme attacks on the LGBTQ community by New Hampshire Republicans, which are a stain on our state's long history of supporting their rights. What's your basic reaction to that on this measure in school sports?
Well, I just told you, I supported adding gender identity to the anti-discrimination statutes, you know, several years ago.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean what applies for, you know, these broad categories of employment, housing, and public accommodation. Does that mean that biological boys who identify as girls with an advantage, okay, in terms of speed and strength, should take scholarship opportunities, playing time, positions on teams away from girls, or be able to go into girls' locker rooms? I don't think so. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, the polling is very strong on our side on the issue. And I think, you know, it will play out in the election. It's not anti-LGBTQ, but as I keep saying, Jack, all the time, one person's rights can't come at the expense of someone else's. And unfortunately, that's what's happening here. And I think those of us who stood up for girls and sports and the privacy of girls in their locker room, that's where the public is.
You know, I'm wondering, and I said this earlier, Senator Jeb Bradley, because, you know, women in sports fought for so many decades to get more equal rights, you know, at the high school and college level. You don't hear more. You do whenever you hear a female athlete stand up and say, "This is wrong. I think that this is unfair." It's like she doesn't get that athlete is almost singled out and almost, I don't want to say bullied, but doesn't get the podium to express herself much. And I'm wondering why more women don't speak up on this issue. Is kind of like, no, this is a fairness issue on competition. We worked very hard for our sports, and why do you think that is?
I don't know the answer to that. I mean, but look at Riley Gaines, for instance, okay? I mean, she would have been the top NCAA swimmer, but she was beaten by a biological man. And she has stood up, and she has been attacked ceaselessly. But thankfully, you know, not only was she a great swimmer, but she's even more courageous as a human being. And I think she is displaying the unfairness of, you know, the fact that she was robbed of a NCAA swimming title.
Mm. One of the questions, I'm just curious, I'm reading some of this story here. There was a senator on this issue about banning biological males from girls-only sports. Senator, I guess, Donovan Fenton, Democrat, Keene. Are we, I don't know if you saw his quote, are we asking male coaches to inspect, well, I'll just say, the private areas of a 10-year-old girl? Can parents be present, or will administrators be going to students directly and asking them in private to pull down? Anyway, claiming that the student-athletes without a birth certificate will be forced to undergo exams by school employees. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think virtually every child has a birth certificate. I mean, you can't be born in this world without a birth certificate. So I think that is a smokescreen designed to confuse the issue. It's not a problem. Other states have dealt with this. It's not a problem.
And the only other one I want to ask you is, this is kind of an interesting story about illegal crossings of migrants at the northern border, not the southern border.
So, I mean, the number of crossings at the northern border has increased dramatically. Last year, it set a record in the Swanton sector, which covers from Maine to, you know, New York State. A group of us went to the northern border last week on a road where people only have to walk across a river. It's very easy. They've been seen doing it. It's very remote. By the time that law enforcement gets there, these folks are long gone. And so, you know, I mean, it is a real problem. And there have been a number of terrorists apprehended or on the terror watch list, I'm sorry, at the northern border. Drugs have come across the northern border. It's very porous. It's easier to get across the northern border in many regards than the southern border. So, you know, it's funny. I'm sitting here with my good friend Chuck Morse, who's here for the Law Enforcement Memorial, and he's made immigration a huge part of his campaign for governor. And, I mean, I think that we need people that are willing to stand up and say we have to protect our northern border.
Would you mind putting the senator on for a minute with us?
He's right here. He's right here.
Okay. Put him on.
Morning, Jack.
Senator Chuck Morris, a Republican candidate for governor. By the way, we had on Colonel Jordan yesterday talking about the Law Enforcement Memorial. Hey, want to talk a little gubernatorial election? Be spontaneous for a minute or two?
Sure.
Had counselor Tuesday morning, executive counselor Cindy Warmington on my show. You know, she's been challenging Kelly Ayotte to a debate before the primary on abortion rights. But when I talked to her about abortion rights, I said my understanding when I had Senator Ayotte on the show, as well as you, Chuck Morris, that the current New Hampshire law with no restrictions on abortion through the first full 6 months, just some in the last three, that's what they support, not an abortion ban per se. But, you know, Democrats call that the abortion ban because of the last 3 months. So I asked Cindy Warmington, should there be any restrictions at all on an abortion? And, you know, what about the current law? And she pretty much said she wants to get rid of that current law. What's your reaction to that?
Well, Jack, I think you exactly hit the question that she needs to answer. I wish Kelly would debate me because three times we've had debates turned down now, but we need, as Republicans, to be talking about this. You know, we've basically been strong about the fact that the first 6 months, a mother gets to work with her doctor and her family and choose on her what she'd do on an abortion. The seventh, eighth, and ninth month, we said no. And the Democrats don't want to answer the question as to what policy they'll support. I mean, 70% of the people support the policy that we pass. And we put our answer up. Now tell her to put her answer up. I mean, she basically will allow abortions up to birth and after. I mean, those are the questions they need to answer, and I think that's the right question that you asked.
Now, when the Democrats say Republicans passing, like yesterday in the Senate, Senator Bradley was talking about banning biological males from competing in all-girls high school sports or talking about the northern border or immigration crisis, they say that's a smokescreen to take the voters' minds off of other issues that, you know, really matter. Do you support that measure yesterday, and what are your thoughts on that?
It is a smokescreen. They're the ones putting up the smokescreen. I mean, having biological males playing girls' sports is wrong. I mean, I think it's important. What the Senate passed yesterday is important to establish in our state. I mean, it's obvious that we don't want males and girls' locker rooms. I mean, you know, I have a daughter. If that had ever happened, you know, while my daughter was playing sports, I mean, that would have been awful because I couldn't have not spoken up about it. And the fact today that these athletes are stepping into girls' sports that are males is wrong. And I think they're the ones putting up the smokescreen like they're defending something that's logical. It's not true. As for the borders, and, you know, the fact is, them talking about, you know, there's no problem at the border and that their strong stance on it is let's create sanctuary cities in New Hampshire, That's ridiculous. And I think we as Republicans are leading right now. I certainly have been talking about this on the campaign trail. I don't believe we should weaken our stance at all. I think this is where Kelly and I disagree with each other. I mean, we certainly shouldn't be talking and weakening stances like talking about amnesty as a party. I think we should lead and make New Hampshire strong.
All right, Chuck Morse, I appreciate it. Law Enforcement Memorial, good crowd showing up. Important day. 55 officers lost their lives serving our state over the years. Your thoughts on the Law Enforcement Memorial?
Yeah, I've attended it every year, Jack, as Senate President, and I'm here today because we should be, you know, here at the memorial service and respecting the losses of people that actually have supported New Hampshire. I think we should be supporting law enforcement, and that's one of the strong stances I've taken in this race for governor.
Not every week, Mr. Landergan, in the state Senate on a day, do you have bills passing, touching upon legalizing marijuana for recreational use, end-of-life issues like assisted suicide, when that might be legal, if it were, and then banning biological males from competing in all-girls public sports in New Hampshire schools. Kind of a busy day yesterday, Kevin.
Sure was, Jack. Yeah, went past the 10 o'clock hour last night in the Senate to get what they wanted to get done, and they didn't have to finish everything. Some bills even got put off to next week, but a lot of big debates, a lot of partisan rhetoric, right? A lot of messaging we're going to see in this next election, you know, whether it's LGBTQ issues or I don't think assisted suicide was that way. That was very much kind of a personal conscience decision that every senator was making. It broke in many different ways. I mean, one Republican supported it, but most of the Democrats supported it, but not all. Senator Lew was against it, as were a few others. So it was a tough vote for them, and it was interesting. Governor Sununu did not want to weigh into that issue, didn't even take a position prior to the vote. He's very close to people in the disabled community that have raised serious concerns about the so-called slippery slope, which is once you adopt an assisted suicide plan in a lot of states and in Canada, we certainly saw, as Jeb Bradley spoke of, they've dramatically expanded the population that would be covered under assisted suicide, including in Canada, people with mental illness or people
right.
with Alzheimer's.
Yeah, so, these are big. These are emotional. Can we go back to the high school, the transgender issue in sports?
Sure. Yeah.
How did any Democrats vote in favor of that bill, or is it all along party lines?
It was all along party lines, Jack. Definitely was. Both
was
in the
vote,
House
was the vote 14-10 or 13-10?
It was 13-10. Senator Denise Ricciardi from Bedford, by the way, yesterday collapsed on the Senate floor during debate on that very issue.
Oh, wow.
She was taken to a local hospital for observation. We're told
she okay?
she's doing very
oh.
well. It appeared it might have been a dehydration or blood
yeah.
sugar issue, something.
Yeah. It happens. It
Senator
happens more
Susan,
than... Yeah.
Senator Suzanne Prentice, who's an EMT, by the way, immediately, the video shows her, just jumped into action. The
yeah.
first responders came in, got her out quickly. She's doing quite well. But for the rest of the day, she wasn't there, and that's why you had 13-10.
So I'm just curious, because Senator Lew's been a big educator and coach in athletics.
Yep.
So he voted against the measure?
He did. He did.
Yeah, interesting. Okay.
Yep. As I say, with regard to the election, this LGBTQ issue has been a rallying cry for Democrats in
yes.
states across the country, right? And they've stood up against these bills in
yep.
in red states, blue states, and tried to make them wedge issues, if you will, in this next election. But as Senator Bradley said, more than 20 states now have adopted these bans. You've got the Independent College Association nationally that has also come out and said transgender girls can't compete in our female college program. So it's becoming more and more of a big issue. Senator Dan Innes spoke of Caitlyn Jenner, who used to be, as you know, Kris Jenner, won the decathlon, Olympic gold medal, now a transgender woman, very much in support of this legislation. He says, it wouldn't be fair for me to compete, even at my age today, against females in sports because of the advantages I have.
Let me ask you this one, Kevin, switching gears, and I asked Senator Bradley. Actually, I just had Senator Morse on this. who happened to be with Senator Bradley. It was interesting. I had executive counselor, Democrat gubernatorial candidate Cindy Warmington on my show Tuesday morning. And, of course, she's fixating and focusing on Kelly Ayotte. I think strategically you'd say it better than me, trying to elevate herself in the primary again with Joyce Craig, the Democrat, to kind of focus to make it look like she's already the nominee, going with Kelly Ayotte, already the nominee. We know both Ayotte and Warmington have primary opponents. We just heard from Kelly's. One of her main ones, Chuck Morrison, of course, Joyce Craig. But when I asked Cindy Warmington, she wants to debate and talk about abortion rights with Senator Ayotte, I said, my understanding, and I'm paraphrasing, Counselor, is that Kelly Ayotte has supported the current New Hampshire law, which has no restrictions on abortion through the full 6 months, only some in the last three. And you call that an abortion ban. I basically asked Cindy Warmington, is there any restrictions you would impose on abortion through the 9 months, and what do you think of this law? And she would get rid of it. She calls that, the current law, an abortion ban. So it was kind of the first salvo on this issue that I think you're going to hear a lot about in the gubernatorial race, whoever the nominees are. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's true, Jack. I mean, at the end of the day, Republicans have immigration and the economy / inflation on their side, and Democrats have abortion. And both sides are clearly going to try and move swing voters to their camp on the basis of the issues they think benefit them the most. And that's why we've seen for months the Democrats talk about this abortion ban that New Hampshire has, which isn't a ban on abortions in the first 6 months, but the messaging is the same. And they talk about the Trump abortion ban, even though Trump in this campaign has said, I don't support a national abortion ban. If I have another four years back in the White House, I think states should make these decisions, whatever they decide to do.
What's even more interesting, if you go back a couple of years, even though Governor Sununu is not running again, after that budget passed and one of the measures was this current bill and Sununu signed it, correct me if I'm wrong, from a on-the-record position, Governor Sununu, as a Republican, says he's pro-choice.
Sure.
Democrats called that bill, which has no ban through 6 months, they actually called it on signs and messaging the Sununu abortion ban.
Right. Yeah.
And he says he's pro-choice. So it's just interesting how the semantics go in this debate.
It is. It truly is. The drug legalization bill for marijuana has reached a critical mass stage. Last night,
what do you think is going to happen?
The Senate, for the first time, passed a bill. I mean, in 20 years, this state Senate's always been the burial ground, and they actually initially approved this thing. Now it goes to the Finance Committee and the Sausage Factory, and there are going to be more amendments there probably. Senator Bradley's going to bring some of them. Others will as well. This thing may very well be fine-tuned. Right now, conceptually, Chris Sununu supports this bill that came out last night. I'm sure there are details in it, commas, clauses he'd like to add or subtract, but this idea of sell marijuana is what he wanted, and he got it out of the Senate with a 14-9
vote. You think this could pass and become law?
It's possible. I mean, that's why I say we're at this critical stage, and here's the critical question, right? Is at the end of the day, if the Senate finally passes this for the last time and it goes over to the House, what do they do? If you remember last year, how did we get that miracle state budget last year? Everybody thought there's no way the closely divided House is going to support a budget that Sununu is going to sign, and ended up doing it because when the budget came over from the Senate, the both parties said, we move to concur with what the Senate has done. And that's exactly what they did by an overwhelming margin. Will the House do this on marijuana? Right now, I would say no, and the reason is there's some things in this bill that Democrats and Libertarian Republicans don't like. Mainly, the biggest problem they have with it is the penalty for public use, which actually would, under the Senate bill, you could be put in jail for a second offense for smoking pot in public when you're not supposed to. And in Libertarian Republicans and all the Democrats don't like that idea at all. But would they? In other words, is that a hill you want to die on? In other words, if you want legalized pot in some form, and you can always this thing is going to change, even if Sununu signs it in the succeeding years. Do you go along with this proposal? That's going to be the discussion now over the next couple of weeks. Or do we go to a conference committee between the House and the Senate over their competing bills? And very often we've seen in the past on issues like bail reform, conference committees is where you have death by a thousand cuts.
I was going to say, that's usually a way to...
It's getting amended and changed, and nobody really comes together.
Yeah, that could happen. I call him the great one because he's a buddy of mine. So it just sort of fits, you know, like I call J-Dog the illustrious one. Wayne Semprini, really a top-notch real estate expert. And I think with this economy and affordable housing crisis, it's always fun to talk about real estate, of course. Wayne, also a big part of Plymouth State University, has helped them do so much up there on programs, and he's helps out the college that he went to. But joining us, talking some real estate on a Friday. Thanks for being here.
Jack, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it, and congratulations on a great 12 hours yesterday.
It was a big day, a lot of people. Let's talk some real estate. This is what I hear. Rockingham, Dover, right where we're sitting in Studio 2, right up in the Maine,
right.
Portsmouth, you know, where you're from originally, Hampton, Northampton, Hampton, the whole seacoast. Good luck finding anything under $1 million, and if you do, you're probably going to have to put $300 or $400 into it. I'm hearing that all the time.
Exactly,
is that right?
That's where it's at. That's where it's at. I mean, you can pay well over $1 million and still be planning on putting plenty of money into it. So that's, I mean, that's just what it's come to.
But you grew up here. Does this blow your mind a little bit?
Well, I keep having my mind blown every 2 or 3 years on the seacoast. You know, we've experienced a few recessions, none of which really beat us up too badly.
It's kind of a bubble. Yeah,
exactly. You know, they're kind of adjustments. Yeah, it's just a strong area. It's a great place to live. I mean, that's why people are selecting New Hampshire, you know, the best place in the country to live, for a lot of reasons, for retirees, for education, no crime. It's an amazing place. So I can see it's an easy product to sell. The product, Jack, is we don't have enough product to sell.
And what about something, you know, a lot, and I've said on the show, you don't have to get into public policy, but I know you're not adverse from it. You're former chair of the Republican Party in New Hampshire.
I'd be happy to talk about
A lot of people moving in, I don't blame them for leaving Connecticut and Mass and New York.
Sure.
But remember why you left there.
Please, don't bring those ideas to New Hampshire.
I'm serious, though.
Yeah.
They come here, they'll spend $1.5 to $2 million on a home. Good luck for the local family trying to afford it who grew up here. Because, you know, if you're a teacher, hospitality worker, police officer, firefighter, good luck. So if you want to move here, great, free and open. We understand it. But please remember why you left those places.
Jack, my youngest son had a T-shirt that he had made up years ago. And there's a campaign going on in New Hampshire right now that has adopted it. It's Don't Mass Up New Hampshire. And it's the truth. This is a great place. And Massachusetts, again, is showing they've never seen a tax that they don't want to embrace.
Yeah.
It kills an economy. I've got so many friends down there who would love to come and find something in New Hampshire. The problem is, Jack, as you know, the offerings are not great. And if something does come on the market, it's on the market for less than a day.
What are the hottest areas in the seacoast? I mean, we're in Dover. That's getting pretty popular. But Portsmouth, Newington, Rye.
Yeah. Newington, we just don't have many housing. I live in Newington now. There aren't that many opportunities. There's a big development on the water that's really popular. High end homes. Newington to me is the neatest community I've ever lived in.
Really?
Yeah, it really is. I'm just so thrilled to be there. Besides the fact that I've got my grandkids in my backyard,
powerful,
a mile down the street.
Powerful magnet, right?
Absolutely.
Well, let's go back to do you see a slowdown? I mean, you know, we were told not to get into politics 6 months ago. Inflation was coming down. The Federal Reserve was going to start to lower interest rates by a quarter of a point. That's not happening now through the end of the year.
No, no.
Because inflation's still too high. Everything. So it's, you know, over 7% if you want to get a 30-year fixed mortgage.
Jack.
Double the cost. Is anything going to slow this down?
I'll tell you what's possibly not. But think about this. Think about the young buyers, the young couple that's been saving and saving. Okay, they buy a $500,000 house and a mortgage, 3 years ago, you know, would be $2,400
all in.
Now it's like $3,600 a month,
closer to $4,000.
Right,
everything's
and,
double,
and they're paying, and their people don't understand this, but they're paying over $700,000 in interest. Yeah. Over that 30 years.
It just shows you what raising rates, and
terrible.
Of course, we've seen rates higher,
yeah.
But it will never see 2.9% again in our lifetime, do you think?
No,
I mean,
not in our lifetime.
I don't think they're going to ever get below 5.5. Yeah, I think that will be the new norm.
That may be the equilibrium, but the the bottom line is, I mean, Washington doesn't have a clue. I'm not going to point fingers at any
Well, you can on this show.
Well, there's one party that's worse than the others, but they're all pretty good at spending.
Yes.
And that's a, spending means printing. And printing's inflationary, and that's just killing
us. Look at this inflation we're dealing with. When you go to the grocery store, when you buy anything, it didn't just come out of thin air.
No.
The politicians in Washington spent trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars too quickly and pumped too much money in the economy too fast, chasing too few goods. Yeah. I learned that at UVM in my economics. How's that?
Absolutely.
But if you asked half those politicians, imagine if I went up with a camera and a crew, a microphone, and said, Senator, Mr. President, how do you define inflation economically?
And they couldn't. And they couldn't.
They'd be like, what? How do you define, what is it?
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean? No, what is it? And I don't think they could tell you. Too few, too many dollars all at once chasing too few. It dries everything up.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't mean to say anything. I was on the road the other day. I got a breakfast sandwich because I was on the road and was hungry. And, I remember when it was like $2.95, $2.50, $6 for a little biscuit. $6 with an egg and a piece of bacon on it. $6.
You got out of it cheap. Let me tell you, Jack. I really thought I'm surprised that the rates have only gotten up to 7.5%.
Yeah.
Because I took economics at a different college.
Yeah.
I would have expected, in order to aim this, that they would have had to have gone even higher. So I'm happy. I'm happy to see that it's only at 7.7.
I know, because inflation hasn't come down that much.
No.
It's sort of stabilized again. It's too high. All right. So again, we're going into that spring summer months.
Right.
Things are probably just going to stay hot. What is the hottest market? If you had to go between, let's just say, you're in you're in Newington, but we're in Dover. Let's go from Dover down to Hampton.
Yeah.
If you the numbers want hottest, the highest, medium, or whatever.
Most in demand is Portsmouth, Newcastle. Newcastle's in huge demand, but Newcastle
again, low taxes.
Has low taxes,
but a small area,
and it's a small area and a very finite number of properties that even can go on the market. Rye's always popular. Northampton, the whole seacoast. There's not a gremlin in the seacoast. There really isn't, and that goes all the way up to Wells, and it stops at the Massachusetts border, by the way. And Newburyport is a great town.
Yeah.
Okay. But there are people coming from Newburyport who are buying in New Hampshire
just because of the taxation and
absolutely.
Mass.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But
you wonder it's hard in the last 5 years what's happened. I can't even fathom 5 to 10 years from now.
Yeah.
Will this level keep moving up? And then you made a very good point. Younger families, and I'll define younger anywhere from 25 to 40 years old. They have these lower mortgages, and they should probably never give them up. So I guess it's golden handcuffs. But if they're having some kids and a dog or two and they need a bigger home, and I'm hearing this from – this is another phenomenon we can touch on before the break, Wayne Semprini. By the way, All Land Realty in the Seacoast, All Land.
Alland.
Alland, is that how you pronounce it?
A-L-A-N-D.
Okay, but you're with them now. Wayne Semprini, but with an S. But real quickly, I'm hearing from couples that might be looking to downsize.
Mm-hmm.
They've been in a home 20, 30 years. The good news is – they can sell their home and get a lot. The bad news is, where do they move? Because the presumption is they're moving to sort of put some money in the bank, but everything is as expensive, if not more. So where do you move to? Where do you go?
Well, one thing, Jack, I think there's a move on within the legislature to loosen up on allowing housing. I've heard that they've gone from, allowing additional dwellings on the property to now allowing an entire home to be, so I think you'll see things loosening up there. They have to. We have a huge demand problem and a gigantic supply problem.
Yeah.
And until you get your arms around the supply, you just can't address the demand. And it's pretty.
Well, again, I've seen a lot over the years. I remember in New Hampshire in the early 90s when we had a real estate depression.
Yeah.
You couldn't give your home away. Since then, home ownership, home equity is through the roof. It's still your best. I no offense to financial planners. I love them. We have some great sponsors on the show. They always tell you, don't count your home as part of your assets. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
the most you ever.
It may be the most liquid part of your portfolio.
Well, I have developer friends that when they sell a property, no offense to banks and the market, they put their money right back into another development. They think their money's better off in real estate than down the road at the bank. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. Aaron Rial, thank you, Wayne Cimprini, Alland Realty. Is there a website or a number or website or
A-L-A-N-D.
I've seen the signs.
AllandRealty.com.
This is where the Granite State comes to talk. This is the Pulse of New Hampshire. Good morning, New Hampshire, powered by Sig Sauer. Now, back to Jack Heath on the Pulse of New Hampshire.
Aaron Rial, it's just sort of fortuitous or ironic that your subject today, NBC News Radio national correspondent, the great one, Aaron Rial, on a Friday. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning, Jack.
It's ironic your subject is affordable daycare, right? Is that your subject today?
I could have written this story, man.
No, I know, but listen to this story, and I know it's an aberration, but it may not be. It's a local story. I don't want to go on, but a Manchester daycare owner and three employees are accused of sprinkling melatonin on the kids' lunch, sprinkling it on there during lunch so the kiddies sleep. They're they turn themselves in, arrested for child endangerment. And I talked to a caregiver this morning for the state, and she said, Jack, pathetic story, but a lot of these parents have no choice. They have no choice to send their kids to some shady places because of the cost of daycare. So here your subject is appropriate today.
Oh, for sure. And that's a national story. You guys are that's huge. People have been talking about this all morning all over the country.
Really?
And
I didn't know that.
Yes,
are you serious?
No, it is. I called stations all over the country and discussed these stories as a national correspondent. I called different you do the due diligence for each story as well. You reach out to the nonprofits and the child care centers. And this story is at the forefront. It is a big deal. And I have to be honest, as a parent, I would lose it if I found out my child
care
center
put
melatonin. If you're willing to poison them, and not poison, I get it. I take melatonin myself. Like, I'm not being crazy here. But if you're willing to do that, you're willing to do other things. Like, it's actually...
I know. And, you know, I don't mean to harp on this. I didn't know it was gone national, Aaron. But
yeah.
I said this morning, it's Friday, I don't, you know, you can't judge a book by its cover, but sometimes you can. Sometimes I saw the mugshots of the folks charged, doing this. I wouldn't leave my boss. I wouldn't leave my dog there.
There you go.
That's
and
just me.
Listen,
I have situational awareness.
You're right.
I'm aware of my surroundings. Aaron, very expensive, but it's how much... average. Is there an average for, like, monthly daycare for a family that has to, you know, leave their kid, I don't know, if it's 6 or 7 hours a day, whatever it is? What is the average? I don't know anymore.
It depends on where you live in the country, but listen to this stat. It's going to blow your mind. The cost of two kids in child care now exceeds the average rent payment by at least 25% nationwide. In the Northeast, two children in child care, average cost, $32,614 a year. Average housing cost, $27,000.
So more than housing cost. Wow.
More than housing
cost.
And
on top of that, inflation. Unbelievable. All right, Aaron. Make a good weekend. Aaron Rial, NBC News. Thank you. We're going to be doing our marina tour again with our friends at Goodhue Boat Company and the Goodhue Marinas all around the region. And of course, they've grown nationally now when they have that great boat club. But we'll be on the water on a Friday because I'm not that bright, but I figured out a while ago someone has to do a perfectly good talk radio show on a lake on a Friday. Someone's got to do it. Might as well be me, J-Dog, and our crew. And Cody with the general manager side of all of this stuff, joins us as Cody does on our live remotes on Fridays. I think we're starting, Cody, are we starting in Meredith or Wolfboro on Friday? Do you know the first one?
I can't remember. I think it is Meredith, now that you mention it.
Okay. But you have a lot going on. Spring sales, you got some events coming up, and we always like to talk about the opportunities for fresh and salt water. So I'm going to let Cody run with this because he's got a great outlook on this. Cody, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, we have open house events tomorrow, actually, in Meredith and Wolfboro. So midday, if folks have some time tomorrow, or obviously always watching the weather, but, you know, boats in the water and some food and snacks. And a good opportunity to see the new models, you know, take a drive, you know, see what you think and hopefully upgrade.
Yeah, and you have a lot of new and used stuff. How's the inventory overall? Because a couple of years ago, the demand was sort of outpacing supply. How are you doing on inventory overall?
It depends a little bit on the models and the families of boats. So what's kind of going on nationally inventory-wise with boats in general is pontoon boats. There's a lot of inventory nationally and in our region as well, a lot of pontoon boats. So if you're in the market for a pontoon boat, it's kind of a buyer's market there. The other place that there is a lot of inventory is on the water sports boats, the tow boats. So you think of wakeboarding and skiing and surfing. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of inventory nationally and in our region as well there. So there are incentives and programs and things on those boats. And there are some things. So we have Mastercraft, we have Sylvan pontoons, and we're no exception. We have inventory right now, which is different than, you know, going back to, you know, the last few years. Where we have less inventory is on kind of the traditional bow rider side. So you think of our Cobalts and our Chaparrals. There's not as much inventory there. There are some deals happening with the manufacturers right now. That's mostly just because the model year changes usually in July. So mm-hmm. we go from the 2024 models to start seeing a couple of the 2025 models trickle in, you know, July, August. So dealers and manufacturers always want to make room for that inventory. You see the auto, you see that type of thing happen on the auto side, and it's the same in boats where we try to have the inventory right, which means there's some deals out there for customers if you're looking for something new. And then obviously, whenever one of those new boats goes out on the water, there's usually mm-hmm. a trade-in right behind yeah. it. And so if right. a pre-owned is what you're looking for, we've got those as well.
Cody, with Goodhue Boat Company, Goodhue marinas around, and of course growing into Maine. Cody, you know I'm a little biased, and I like Boston Whalers. How, and you do more Boston Whaler stuff than I ever realized. So how's the Whaler stuff? Still traditional, still classic, and still avail, you know, good inventory?
Good inventory, still pretty lean. Wish we had some more. But they're catching up a little bit. It was interesting. We were talking with our Boston Whaler corporate representative just yesterday about some boats that we ordered in 2022. This time, so over 2 years ago, they were ordered in April of 2022,
wow.
and those will be here in June of this year.
I just love the Whaler. Hey, Cody, one thing we don't talk about enough is locations, and also the boat club. I don't know if you're full, but there's great opportunity if you want to get into boating but not pay the full cost for new or used trailer, hauling, storage, and all that. Come and use the boat ahead of time. Pick the boat, whether it's a pontoon boat, bow rider. Tell us about the club and also locations.
Sure. Yeah, great question. So we have our Carefree Boat Club at all of our marina locations. So that's all the way up in on Sebago Lake, like you mentioned, Ossipee Lake, Sunapee, and two locations on Winnipesaukee, Wolfboro and Meredith. So a member of our club can actually drive boats at all of those locations, but only pay one membership fee. And that's a great way to get on boating, you know, especially if you are not necessarily always available to spend the time and the mm-hmm. investment that's required you know, to really get your money's worth out of owning a boat. So they've been popular. We do have memberships available at each of the locations. Wolfboro and Sunapee are filling up the fastest, but we still mm-hmm. have some space remaining. So now's the time certainly to talk to one of our salespeople about that.
Well, Cody Gray, GoodhueBoat.com, or is that right?
That's right.
So all this information, Goodhue, G-O-O-D-H-U-E, boat.com. I just got a text from Jimmy Fallon in Wolfboro. I said, Jack, you're going to be up there. I'll be there Friday. So no, I don't know if it's him. but good stuff, Cody. And again, the open house tomorrow is where?
Meredith and Wolfboro locations.
And people can come and have some fun and learn more and family and all that stuff?
Exactly. Yeah, boats, boat club, all those things. Absolutely.
All right, give Chris my best in your great service department, by the way, in Wolfboro and Meredith and all your locations, Sunapee, Ossipee, great service locations. I've dealt with a lot of service folks over the years, and I haven't told you this. They've been top-notch. On top of it, they know your boat. Some places, you know, you call, whether it's a vehicle or a boat, and you talk to some folks who are, you know, it's hard to get great people and you probably could use to hire some more. And every time I call, oh, Jack, yeah, she's good to go. Yeah, this is done, this is done, this is done. We're good. And you're not like, really? Well, thank you.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm happy to hear it.
Relay that. All right, Cody, we'll catch you soon, okay, buddy? I appreciate getting us on the water. Thank you very much, Cody, with GoodHueBoat.com, GoodHueBoat.com. Thank you.
Take care.
Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Rory, I know Donald Trump is going to his son's graduation today. I still don't know what The View or CNN are going to do when this hush money trial comes to an end in Manhattan, but what a week it was.
Well, thank goodness for Scotty Scheffler, apparently.
That I know.
Something to talk about today. But,
unbelievable.
Yeah, no testimony today. Michael Cohen likely back on the stand Monday morning for a bit more cross-examination by the defense. Maybe the prosecution will try to rebuild him a little bit in a rebuttal. Wait and see on that. But the judge said, get ready for closing arguments on Tuesday. Let's see, they take Wednesdays off. That means we could have jury deliberations on Thursday, maybe a verdict by a week from today, as the jury probably wants to go home for Memorial Day weekend.
It's impossible to speculate with juries. I haven't been in the courtroom. You haven't been there. No TV cameras. Any gut read? I haven't paying close attention to the credibility of these witnesses. Any gut read on where this goes and what they're seeking and what you think the verdict will be?
I'm still missing the link about what makes this a campaign finance crime. Donald Trump has not been charged with that. Michael Cohen was, but you need that campaign finance corruption element in order to make these felony charges of what would otherwise just be little bookkeeping misdemeanors. So I still haven't seen that evidence really presented well. Interestingly, the defense has an election expert ready to go, but they may not call that person because, well, the prosecution hasn't really brought it up much either.
Interesting insight. I remember John Edwards. Remember him? Thank you, Rory O'Neill. Sure.